we are now down to two teams and maybe two goaltenders, although the way the Stanley Cup final playoffs have gone, we might see all four of them before this series is out. But let's start with the Pittsburgh Penguins. If you're going to defeat the San Jose Sharks, you're going to obviously have to get some pucks by Martin Jones. Have you seen anything where, you know, he's maybe leaning to one area or doing something that makes him possibly vulnerable?
The only thing that you've seen in these playoffs is when Jones does chase, when he does get over-aggressive, when he does lose his net, and it's not often because that's the strength of his game, he's going to stay kind of in the middle of everything and make you beat him with great shots. It's pretty rare. I would say, you know, that first game in the conference finals where he let in that rush goal that led to the winner, that he's going to beat himself. The one spot where he will get a little overextended is moving left to right, going to his blocker side. And this is not totally uncommon. All goalies kind of have one side they move better to than the other for the most part. For most guys, it is that blocker side. Sometimes it's just, you know, there's some different theories on why. Sometimes it's the stick integration with the blocker. I have a theory that the way you turn the blocker to direct pucks into the corner and kind of pull the stick along your pad to steer pucks over creates a tendency to pull them off of pucks, and those tendency and save execution can start to creep into your movement patterns as well, where every time you're moving to that side, you tend to open up and then go rather than rotating into angle and going. And for whatever reason, that's the one thing that Jones does, is he will chase to the blocker side. And by chase, I mean his angles, when he recovers to his right, he comes across in straight lines parallel to the goal line. So if he makes a save at the top of his crease and then recovers to his right, in a hurry or in a kind of quick situation, he will come straight across. He won't get any rotation back to his post. And we've seen quite a few times in these playoffs where he's been caught out of his net on the right side as a result, where he kind of follows the play, and the next thing you know, he's outside of his post, a couple feet above the crease, and, you know, against the Kings, they banked one in behind him while he was way out of position. One time against the Blues, he just barely managed to kind of make an awkward, like, left skate against right post with butt facing the shooter kind of save. We've seen more of those in that situation than in any other situation with Martin Jones. There aren't a lot of weaknesses in his game because he plays everything kind of so middle of the road. He doesn't over-pursue for the most part. He doesn't play a hyper-aggressive game in almost any situation. That's the only one that comes out. That said, when you play as conservative as he does, when you play that kind of neutral game, he gives up the top of the net. It's almost a stereotypical butterfly goaltender with him. When you break down the shooting chart and where goals go in, it's all around the perimeter. So he forces you to make a good shot to beat him rather than letting you beat him by, or beating himself, as I said earlier. The question is, against this Sharks defense, do you get many chances to get the kind of looks that allow you the time and space to beat him over the shoulders, beat him around the edges of the net? And that's something that I think could play a huge role in not only the Sharks continuing to have success, but whether we see Martin Jones the whole way or we get a return of James Reimer at some point.
So now you're the San Jose Sharks, and you've defeated some pretty good goaltenders thus far in the playoffs, but you know, obviously varying degrees. You got Quick and Urine, and then you went to Brian Elliott and at times even Jake Allen. Now you're going to a young goaltender in Murray, who is trying to become kind of the next Patrick Roy or Ken Dryden potentially.
Cam Ward,
sure, in this Stanley Cup run. And I know you've talked about Murray. His own coach felt like maybe he was waning because he went away from him, but we assume it's going to be Murray. What can the Sharks, and I know that it's easy to sit here and say this because when the game's on, there's only limited opportunities and such, you know, lightning fast reaction time to even decide these type of things. But you told us earlier last week, you saw Murray, you know, getting too aggressive and leaning. And then, you know, in the last few games when he came back after Fleury took over, he had seemed to rectify that issue.
Well, I would say that in game six, there were still signs that, you know, this was not the same guy we saw for the first few rounds, and that that was a little more survival. And he got through that game, and then in game seven, let's be honest, he wasn't tested. So The habits that had crept into his game in terms of tracking, in terms of moving to his glove side, and he is the one, you know, I talk about most goalies being more deficient to the blocker side. Murray's got a side that he's better to as well, but in his case, he actually moves to his blocker better and to his glove poorly. He doesn't get that same rotation to his glove side, and I think that's why you see when you break down the goal charts and where goals are coming from against Murray, it's that left side of the ice. As far as where you shoot, you're absolutely right, Jason. Like, goalie coaches, and this is what they do. They break down the opposition goaltender, and they find spots, types of plays, certain situations that they identify as weaknesses. Whether the shooters on their team, A, pay attention to those scouting reports, and I'd say it's a little more than 50-50, and in a seven-game series where you're seeing the same guy night in and night out, I would think that those scouting reports tend to trickle through the room to the point where even the guys that don't pay attention in an 82-game season are paying attention now. And all it takes is one shot where you have a clean look and you see a tendency and are able to exploit it. That can be the difference in a game and the difference in a series. So what are those tendencies with Murray? A lot of talk about his high glove. It's pretty obvious at this point. It's where the majority, higher than average number of goals went in on him during the season. I think you saw the Penguins try to make an adjustment for the way he was getting exposed up there. They switched his glove positioning where he holds his glove halfway through the year. If you watch him early, it's in more of a handshake position, whereas if I was reaching out with my glove hand to shake your hand, kind of fingers pointed straight towards you, that's how we started the season. As the year went on and into the start of the playoffs, you watched him go to what we call a fingers-up position, where the kind of palm is facing the shooter and the fingers are kind of pointed straight up over his shoulder, all to compensate for what is a pretty obvious, I don't want to say tell, because it's not so much like he gives it away and then a shooter goes, it's just more of a habit. He drops the left side shoulder. You watch film from behind him on shots to the glove or shots anywhere. It's like his shoulders aren't square. The left side is dipped noticeably compared to the right, and there is some glove side exposure there. I think some of the pucks that he's gotten pieces of with his glove during these playoffs, but not caught in cleanly, that result in rebounds out in front of him, that's the sign of a goaltender who's maybe adjusting to a new glove position. I mean, you change where a guy holds his glove during the season, and he may be not going to get as many pucks clean as he used to. So the glove side high is something that clearly has been identified more and more as the playoffs have gone on. Movement to the glove side that kind of sets up a sort of poor shot preparation on that side. He has a tendency, when he moves right to left, Jason, if you watch, see if you can see it tonight. When he's moving from his right to his left, rather than just rotate his body to the angle he wants to go and drive through that rotation, you will actually see that left skate will open up like a reverse C cut. If you were skating backwards as a defenseman, he will open up that left skate and try and kind of build momentum and almost back into his movement from right to left. And some goalies use it as a momentum build to kind of get some momentum moving in that direction and then make their push. But at the end of the day, no matter how you slice it down or how you want to make it a preference or make an excuse for it, it's a delay. And it's a delay in his movement from his right to his left that leaves him late getting to position and leaves him even more vulnerable, high glove, on a side that's already a weakness. So if you can get him moving right to left, if you can design a power play setup that, you know, breaks down and kind of sets up those types of movements to quick one-timers, that's exploitable. The other thing we've seen as the playoffs have gone on, because there isn't a deep book on Murray, is blocker side. Blocker side high, he tracks pucks so well, using kind of elbows and blocker and not turning on that side like a lot of goalies do and kind of opening up the top of the net. He really kind of closes down the top of the net with that elbow and that shoulder up. But we have seen him in tight in one-on-one situations where his preference is to keep the stick out in front of his five hole and that elbow stays high, and that's leaving a hole between the body and the arm, and you're seeing guys shoot in breakaway situations one-on-one. Instead of trying to beat him high blocker, the stereotypical shot, they're trying to beat him between the body and the blocker in tight. To me, there's a scouting report that maybe wasn't there when the playoffs started, but pretty clearly is there now as we get towards the end.
Kevin Woodley from In Goal Magazine and NHL.com joins us. Woods, I love it. That's a great breakdown. I'm definitely going to be watching that throughout the series. And just, you know, going the from right to left. So ideally then, you know, if you're looking for the one-timer, you want your one-timer guy lined up on the right wing, which is the left of the goalie.
Well, yeah, and this is, to me, this is what the problem with the Capitals set up on their power play was. I mean, the Washington Capitals, and by the end of the playoffs, they started moving Ovechkin around so that Murray couldn't lock in on where he was and create some hesitation in his left-to-right movements. But he is clearly better moving left-to-right as opposed to right-to-left. And everything the Capitals do on the power play runs through Nick Backstrom off the left wall. So every pass, every movement that they were trying to set up played to Murray's strengths rather than to his weakness. So if you can set up a power play, if your power play is dynamic enough or has enough options in terms of who's running it and from where to attack him moving in the other direction, you're going to, at the very least, not play to his strength, play towards one of his weaknesses. And I would argue that the Sharks, the way they like to work that power play out of that left corner with Thornton, you know, and if Joe's not hesitating to shoot, they have some options there where they can change things up with him and Pavelski on the same side.
All right, Kevin, the Edmonton Oilers, of course, they've got their starting goaltender in Cam Talbot. I think everybody agrees with that. Looking for some backups. And in the free agent market, there is definitely some. Johnson in Buffalo has, you know, he's got a .917 career save percentage as a backup, which is pretty good considering, you know, he doesn't play a whole bunch, although this year he had to play more because of the Leonard injury. Is he the, would he be your number one choice as a backup, or is there somebody else as the free agent goalies you like?
You know what? It's a tough one because that Chad Johnson's a guy who's looking for more opportunity right now. And I think you're right. I think we saw in Talbot a guy who, you know, that was a real positive for the Oilers this season in my mind, the way he played and what they got out of him. So I think Chad Johnson would be perfect for that job. You saw that he's capable, when he gets the opportunity to play more, of carrying a team for stretches. And you don't want to – it's a real tough thing to have. You want a backup who, if you've got a guy like Talbot, you want a backup who can play once a week, maybe once every 10 days, and not be rusty, and Chad Johnson has that experience. But you also want a backup who, if, heaven forbid, Talbot gets hurt or loses his game for a few weeks, or in the case of last year, for the month of pretty much October into November, a guy who can come in and not cost you games. And Chad Johnson checks off both of those boxes for me. The question is whether the Edmonton Oilers check off the box for him in terms of being an opportunity. I mean, spends his summers and his off seasons training with a goalie coach in Calgary, and obviously we know the needs that the Flames have, so there may be a better fit for him closer to home. But he'd be high on that list. A name you mentioned out of the American Hockey League who you know, and maybe you don't sign him just to be a backup, but maybe he'd sign as a guy who could be a number three option with Brassois coming out of the minors and a good mentor down there, has some experience and just knocked off the Toronto Marlies and has had a real nice bounce-back season, Justin Peters. I still believe he's an NHL goalie. Didn't fit with Mitch Korn and the Washington Capitals his first year there, but has rediscovered his game in the American Hockey League this year. And is a guy who, before he went to Washington, had a .919 in Carolina, of all places, a couple years ago. So I like him. The other name that was bounced around was Jonas Enroth, and he just defies the odds to me in terms of, you know, we talk about size and a preference for size. At 5'10", he's one of those guys that shows it's not all about size and square footage. He's done the job before, not playing often, and still being, you know, a guy who can come in and win you games. My nervousness on Enroth is I want to see what this new equipment looks like. I honestly would not be taking a risk on Jonas Enroth until I see what he looks like in the new sizing charts. Because from what I've heard, as much as everybody liked to point at Miller with the puffy chest here as a skinny guy, Jonas is small. And I've heard from a pant and chest and arm perspective, he may be one of the hardest hit. So as much as some people talked about, you know, the rule changes bringing back smaller goaltenders in the NHL, I think the smaller goaltenders could be some of the hardest hit by the new sizing charts. From what I'm hearing right now, it's not even going to be so much as the whole custom tailored, you know, custom fit tailored suit experience that a lot of people have been talking about for the past month, so much as it is, hey, we're actually going to make guys whose sizes fit a medium and a small wear a medium and a small, whereas before there were no mediums in the NHL. It was almost all larges, extra larges, and double extra larges. And Enroth's a guy who I could see getting snuck into a small or a medium, and all of a sudden a 5'10" goalie really looks like a 5'10" goalie, and that would be my hesitation with him. I think he's going to run into that in the free agent market. Teams are going to want to see what he looks like before they sign him to a contract. I know I would if I was a GM, and I really like his game. I'd still want to see it.
Woodley, that's a great point, man. Any idea, have you heard from insiders? I know you're talking with the goalies on when this sizing chart's going to come out.
It'd be interesting to see how much of a glimpse we get at it. I'll be honest, Jason, I'm trying, as always, to get a look myself through the equipment companies, and we have really good relationships with them, but they also don't want to piss off the NHL, so they've been keeping it tight to their vest. I'm not sure that they have a final version just yet. It's kind of continues to be, like I said, they're getting all the measurements of all the guys, and they're putting them into a matrix and trying to see whether how much they need to adjust their large, their medium, their small, to kind of refit that matrix in certain windows to make sure they have something for everyone, more that than just custom fit every guy. That's more of what I'm told is going on behind the scenes. I expect to kind of start to hear a little more in the month of June. They've promised some samples by the end of the month of June, and I've had some guys that are involved in the conversation promise me a sneak peek at some of those samples once they start arriving.
Well, it should be good stuff, and that will definitely be one of the interesting storylines of the summer. Woodley, as always, man, great stuff. We will talk to you next Monday. Who are you picking, by the way, in the Stanley Cup Finals?
I'm picking the Sharks, and the irony is, even in my NHL.com breakdown, I think when I broke down each category on the goaltender specifically, I think Jones won more categories than Murray. And here I am. I think Martin Jones is still exposable. He can be exposed, and he has for brief periods in these playoffs. I just don't see the Sharks' defense allowing it to happen often enough in this playoffs for Pittsburgh to beat him. I just think he is good enough the way he plays to force other teams to beat him, and I just don't see him beating himself, and I'm not sure the Penguins can create enough offense, as good as they are, against this Sharks defense to beat him straight up.
I'm going with the Sharks too, man, so we're in agreement on that. We will see. Now, keep in mind, I picked the Sharks to win the Cup many years, and I was always wrong, so we will see if my picking of the Sharks reverse curse ends this playoffs. Woodley, always good to talk to you, man. We'll do it next Monday.
Enjoy game one tonight, everyone, and we'll talk to you next week.